You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey, everybody. It's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again. My name is Dan. No Mike tonight. He's out hanging out with his family. But we have a good friend of ours here for a very, very special episode that I'm very, very excited to bring. You know him as the founder of VintageIceHockey.com, our number one favorite sponsor. Before that, he was an Isles blogger, and he's just an all-around great guy. And he was the second ever guest on this very program. Here's our friend Kevin Schultz. Kevin, how are you tonight?
Hey, good, Dan. Thanks for having me back.
It is great to have you back. It has been a lot of fun to see the growth of VintageIceHockey.com throughout the years. It started as a blog, really, and has grown into a place where every single day there's new stuff coming. It started out with shirts, and now it's jerseys, and it's hats, and t-shirts, and patches, as you know if you're a patron. How has it been? I mean, obviously, it's been a lot of work from your end, and you have a day job still, too. So, but how has that growth been to kind of watch? Do you look back every once in a while at it and be like, man, I've really created something very, very cool here?
Yeah, it's I appreciate all that. It's been kind of wild. I mean, because it started because I wanted a Long Island Ducks hockey shirt, and I went Googling and you couldn't get one. Nobody was right. Doing that. So, you know, we figured out if that was possible and just was like, started doing it and say, hey, I'll make a couple for myself and, you know, we'll put it out there, see what happens. And the response has just been unbelievable. We're going to be, I guess next season will be our fifth hockey season, which is crazy.
Yeah.
That I've even been doing this for 5 years. And it's just been so much fun. Just all the different teams and the stories and, you know, we're not going to make this a giant ad. You guys are going to just get a lot of awesome history. And,
right.
You know, if you're able to, you know, you can Google the teams and the logos along with us, because some of these logos are just really cool to see.
Yeah.
And even just like the experience of some of people reaching out, they'll be like, this is true. Somebody said their grandfather played for the Sands Point Tigers. So Sands Point, Long Island. Yeah. And somebody sent me a copy of the, from like, I forget what it was, like 1930 or something, a copy of the like awards dinner that the team had at the end of the year. And I'm just like, this is I mean, this is history. This is unbelievable that that even exists. And I know it's extremely obscure and I'm nerding out, but it's just cool to see all this stuff.
Yeah, no, it is. It is cool. And the fact that it's like just sitting in people's basements or attics or whatever for all these years is even more cool. And they can share it with you. But
and it's just like every day it's stuff like that. Oh, my dad played for them. Or I remember, you know, going to the games with my family. And you know, you hear so much about the original six and the NHL, and obviously that history is wonderful, right, of course. But then there's just, you know, there's Fort Worth, Texas,
yeah,
and New Haven, Connecticut,
yeah, right,
and all these different places where people, you know, you hear about the Islanders in the 80s. It was like they were a family, they're part of Long Island. Mm. Well, there's all these teams and all these other places in the 70s and 60s and 80s that were just like that too,
right.
And It's been unbelievable to see. It's so much fun.
They were just as much of a family, but without the sort of widespread success and historical, you know, write-ups mm-hmm. and things like that and Hall of Famers. And that is pretty cool. It's actually funny you mentioned the Long Island Ducks, because I am, in fact, no joke, wearing my Long Island Ducks t-shirt from VintageIceHockey.com, the first one you ever sent me.
Perfect.
And I love it. Yeah, it's nice. Great. You've like lovingly recreated a lot of these logos, and especially in case the cases of the jerseys, like, you know, the Jersey people, they want to know that they got the right thing, you know, and so it's got to be accurate.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
it's got to be just right. Yep. The stripes have to be right. Yeah. If we have an extra piece on the logo or something that isn't right, you know, we're going to hear about
a millimeter too thick or too thin. It's a whole thing. And so like the fact that you have this wealth of content and stuff there is really amazing. And again, it's, you know, there's a reason that you're our favorite sponsor, because I've shopped there. I tell people there all the time, and it's fantastic. So if you haven't shopped VintageIceHockey.com, you definitely should, because Kevin is putting in a lot of work there. But as the man said himself, this is not going to be an hour-long ad. I would love to, but it's not going to be. We are here for a very special purpose. And, you know, we had talked about this, and I thought it would be a cool thing to do when it was just the two of us. We're not going to be talking about individual players here, although we're going to touch on a lot of players. But what we're going to do is a tour through various minor league teams that the Islanders have been affiliated with throughout the year. And there have been a lot of minor league teams across many, many, many minor leagues. AHL, CHL, IHL, ECHL, we're going to cover all this stuff. If you've been a fan of the Islanders since, you know, 2000 or whatever, you will really only have known one major AAA or AHL affiliate for the Islanders, which is the Bridgeport team. First the Sound Tigers, now the Islanders. We're going to talk about Sound Tigers towards the end of the show, but there is an entire history spanning almost the entire country of Islanders minor league teams before Bridgeport. And it's sort of fascinating to go back and see where these teams were, who played for them, whether they were, you know, Hall of Fame players that would win cups with the Islanders, or in a lot of cases, weird Islanders who would only play a handful of games with them. And one of my favorite things about VintageIceHockey.com is you have the histories there of all the teams. If you know anything about minor league hockey or in minor league sports at all, you know that the lifespans of these teams tend to be very, very, very short. They tend to be there and then disappear, sometimes a season later. It can become a real game of detective. It's kind of fun, but it's also probably a lot of work if you're trying to write it all up.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky, because then especially if you go back, you know, even to the 40s and 50s, a lot of teams stopped and started. Right. So, you know, the Baltimore Clippers is a team that was around from, you know, 1945 to like 1975, but they weren't consistently in the same league for 30 straight years. They bounced around leagues and one version went out of business, another one came back in, and it's trying to track it down. Okay, which one is like the real one, or are there multiple kind of real ones? And, you know, just again going, well, I'll jump ahead to one of the teams that we'll talk about is the New Haven Nighthawks, who had three different color setups over a span of about 30 years because they kept changing affiliates. And every time they changed the affiliate, they would keep the logo, but change the colors. Mm. So then they were almost each color for 10 years. And then now there's three sets of people who remember the team, love the team, but no, I want that color. Mm. Oh no, but I want the black and white.
Right. Cause that wasn't theirs or whatever. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the one that they remembered when they, you know, went to the games.
But that's a perfect place to start with the New Haven Nighthawks, because this was actually the Islanders' first affiliate team in the AHL 72, 73. And we've got hockeydb.com up here, and you could look at the Islanders' affiliate history if you want to kind of follow along with us. And this first season, you know, team, you know, obviously the Islanders are an expansion team, so they're almost like a minor league team unto themselves. But looking at the roster here, some of these guys would become pretty famous. Gary Howitt was fourth in the team in scoring that year with 49 points. Some guy wearing number 8 named Bob Nystrom had 22 points. He played 60 games for New Haven that year. So, he, you know, he played a few for the Islanders, I know, but spent most of his time in New Haven. Their goalie of 43 games was a guy named Glenn Chico Resch, who put up some pretty darn good numbers down there, although the team did make the playoffs. And here's one name I didn't expect to see on an Islanders minor league roster. Willie O'Ree, 50 games, yep. 21 goals, 24 points, 45 points for the 1972-73 New Haven Nighthawks. How long have you been sitting on this information that Willie O'Ree played for an Islanders minor league team in the early 70s? That's mind-blowing. Oh, my God. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. It was, I guess, towards the end of his career.
Yeah, he was 36.
But he had spent... Yeah. He spent most of his career out on the West Coast in the WHL, and for whatever reason, he came to the East Coast for a stop there. And I don't think as anything to do with the Islanders, probably just as a, you know, as a, I guess you would say, independent player signing for New Haven.
Yeah, man, could you imagine if they like the expansion Islanders, you know, winners of 12 games their first season had Willie O'Ree on the roster, man. That would have been pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, just looking at the rest of the roster, you kind of wonder what they were thinking with, you know, Nystrom and Howitt and Chico all just sitting in the minors. Like, guys, you didn't need them?
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, like, I mean, I think, well, Nystrom definitely got game. Yeah, he played 11 games that first season. Howitt, yeah, he played 8, and Chico did not play at any. He got his reps in down there. He played 43 games down there. So yeah, I know, seriously. But I guess, you know, maybe they didn't want them to rush them into this terrible situation. They had enough guys stuck there, I guess. But yeah, so that's, I mean, right off the bat, like, that's really interesting that was their first minor league team. But then, as we said, you know, things change, and in the season after, the Islanders moved their team to, first of all, to the Central Hockey League, number one, the CHL. But the team was the Fort Worth Wings. And this actually started kind of a surprisingly long relationship with the city of Fort Worth. And actually, after having a season of the Fort Worth Wings, the Fort Worth Texans became their primary minor league affiliate from 74 to 79. And this is where a lot of players that would go on to play for the cup teams would play. Bob Bourne, famously among them, Lorne Henning, Richie Hansen, of course, famously the first Long Islander to play for the Islanders, Bob Lorimer. But the Fort Worth Texans had, first of all, they had a great logo, tried to kind of adopt the Islanders logo. So the F and W, like the end of the W becomes a hockey stick, and there's the state of Texas there, and it says Texans on the bottom. I have a Fort Worth Texans t-shirt, of course, from VintageIceHockey.com because it's so bizarre. But this team really, although they are lost to the winds of history now, they had quite a history. Like, this team had rivals and a real kind of presence in the Fort Worth area. So, like, what have you learned about this team? I mean, again, most Islanders fans now have never heard of this team, but, like, the Fort Worth Texans were a big deal. They had a lot of big players and again, a real presence in Fort Worth during that time period.
Yeah, and this is it's an interesting thing because I had never, you know, Islanders fan for 30 years, and I had never heard of this or seen this. And then it's like, wait, who was playing for them, and what's their logo look like? I mean, if you go Google the logo, I mean, it's, you know what they based it off of. And so it was really strange to just see this, you know, as I was in my research for this team, and you know, they were affiliated for, you know, 5 or 6 years with the Islanders. And I guess another thing I've learned too is hockey in Texas doesn't sound like things that go together. Mm-hmm. But it's really a hockey state, and it has been for much, much longer than just, you know, when the Dallas Stars were there. Yeah, I mean,
for sure.
It's kind of the Dallas Stars went there because there was this hockey culture there. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to the Texans / Fort Worth Wings. back in the CHL, and they had a huge rivalry with the Dallas Blackhawks, which I need to get more into it. But anytime folks talk to me about those teams, it's I love the Blackhawks, and they used to beat the heck out of the Texans, or the other way around, right? They just have these really famous just brawls and battles. And then into the 90s, you know, both Dallas and Fort Worth had CHL teams until that league, folded, I believe it was around 2010 or something. So yeah, it's just wild to see this. And yeah, and you know, Bourne, Henning, Hansen, you know, next time you talk to Justin Bourne, got to ask him what his dad remembers about Fort Worth, Texas.
Well, he spent a lot of time there. But when I think of the Fort Worth Texans, it's funny to me because, like, I'm still fascinated. This is a total aside, but, like, I'm still fascinated by teams that have minor league affiliates that are very far away from where they play. And this isn't just a hockey thing. Like, I've always been fascinated by, why do the Yankees have a farm team in Columbus? Like, I don't understand. Like, they're the Yankees. They could put a farm team anywhere. Like, put it in Yonkers. Why are they in Columbus? The Mets had the Tidewater Tides for so many years. The guys playing in Virginia. Like, why? I don't understand. It's just...
I totally get you on that. And I don't really know why. Yeah. And like, just off the top of my head, like the Manchester Monarchs were in New Hampshire,
right?
And they were a Kings affiliate.
Yeah,
and it's like,
well, the Canucks had what? They were in Utica for the longest time, like the Utica Comets,
right?
You know? But what's funny to me is like now, you know, they're gonna fly private, and like I'm sure it's very comfortable and everything to fly from, you know, say Manchester to LAX or whatever. But like even in the early 70s, if you're flying private. Flying from out of Dallas, Fort Worth to LaGuardia or Kennedy could not have been easy, right? Like it had to be just a pain in the ass to do. And I wish somebody would tell me why there, like why the Islanders chose there. I don't understand.
Yeah. And I mean, back in the day, it was definitely, it still is today a little bit, but you know, the AHL and the ECHL are pretty locked down. They're getting to the point where it's, you know, the NHL teams own the AHL team, and then they're all just affiliated all the way down. So, but back, you know, you got to remember back in the 70s with the WHA and the 80s and 90s, you had the IHL and the CHL and these leagues that kind of came and went and caused a lot of, in good reasons too, caused a lot of disruption in the sport.
Yeah.
And I guess it was a little, you know, musical chairs and, Where can we even get an affiliate, right?
Yeah, well, some teams are still playing that game, as we'll see a little bit later. But yeah, it is funny because now the AHL is mainly where people get called up from. That's the AAA, in a way, you know, affiliate. Mm-hmm. But back then you used to have a number of different leagues that kind of filled that role. And you know, the Islanders had teams in basically all of them. Before we move on from the Texans, I just want to shout out one player in particular. And if you're an older Islanders fan, he's a guy you will definitely remember and probably have an affinity for. But Billy McMillan was a center, kind of a checking guy, and was on a couple of the early Islanders teams. He didn't make the roster at a training camp in 77, and so they sent him down to Fort Worth, and he became a player coach down there, sort of like a Reg Dunlop slapshot type of deal. And when you know, they won the championship that year, which is kind of crazy. And then in 78, he just dropped the player aspect of it, and just became a coach, and they ended up losing in the first round. But then after that, he had gotten, I guess, enough coaching experience to join Al Arbor's staff as an assistant coach. And so he was an assistant when the Islanders won their first cup in 1980. He ended up replacing Don Cherry with the Colorado Rockies, and then they moved to New Jersey in 1982 and became the Devils. So he was actually the Devils' first coach, which is kind of a wild ride, you know, from being Islander to player coach to assistant coach to NHL coach, all within the span of about 5 years. And so that was pretty wild. He had a long, long career in hockey. Billy McMillan passed away last year. And, I heard about him. I had known his name as kind of an early Islander. But again, in going through all this research, I did not realize that he pulled a player coach thing, which, again, if you're a fan of minor league hockey, it happens a lot, especially back in the 70s. But I mean, that's pretty crazy to have done all of that in a very short amount of time. And to go from, you know, the highest highs of winning championships to playing for the 82-83 Devils, who were not a particularly good team, if we're being honest.
Yeah,
that must be pretty wild.
That's quite a wild ride and all around the country. Mm. And I do just want to give a shout out on the, if you Google Fort Worth Texans and about the sixth result down, Corey Wright wrote a great article and has all kinds of awesome pictures with, on the Fort Worth Texans, and there's one all the way down. I'm not sure which player it is, but he's got a big fro, so it's very 70s, yeah. Very Texans, and definitely worth checking it out.
Yeah, we love Corey. Corey's work is fantastic for the Islanders and has been for many years. So yeah, I will check that out. I'll include that in the article when we put this up for sure, because I want to take a look at it myself. Okay, so after a number of years in Fort Worth, the Islanders then had an affiliate that would also become important in Indianapolis. Again, why? I don't know why Indianapolis, but that was their thing. Same league, Checkers. This was the CHL, and it was the Indianapolis Checkers. And from 79 to 84, that was the Islanders affiliate. And if you think that the Islanders were great between 79 and 84, you would be right. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. In fact, the Checkers also won their championships in 82 and 83 and then lost in the finals in 84. So like, that's unbelievable. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, I guess the Lightning sort of did that with Syracuse, but like, man,
you got a loaded,
seriously,
a loaded franchise roster, man. If you can win the titles in two leagues.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, seriously. And looking at some of these Indianapolis Checkers rosters, you can see some names here that would become, Islanders later on. Scott Housen is on one of these teams. The biggest one, though, and I think the biggest reason why the Checkers won those two championships was the play of a young goalie named Kelly Rudy, who was a superstar in a way for the Checkers. And he was so good, but first the Islanders had Smith and Resch, and then they had Smith and Rolly Melanson, and they couldn't bring him up. Like, they just were too good. And so he ended up getting stuck down there. And he understood, as far as I've read a couple of places where he's like, yeah, you know, that's what happens when you play for a good team. But one guy who I'm looking at the 81-82 Checkers roster here, which is, you know, the first championship they won, third in scoring, is a man featured on an episode of Weird Islanders, and who I said is the most obscure Weird Islander we've ever talked about, Garth McGuigan. Shout out to our buddy Phil Strum for bringing him up. He had 80 games that year, 24 goals, 51 assists, 75 points. Pretty good, old Garth. He had a heck of a season. Don Red Lawrence led the team in scoring with 98 points, 43 goals, 55 assists. No idea who he is. Did not play for the Islanders. Seemed to play a lot for Indianapolis, and played a little bit for the Blues and Flames there. But this is pretty wild. But like, I mean, again, this was a 5-year run with the Checkers as their new main affiliate. And I mean, to have won two championships, like you said, you got to have a pretty stacked roster. Like, so what was the deal with these guys? Like, Indianapolis too is a place you don't really think of as a hockey town, but the Racers had Wayne Gretzky for a little while there. The Checkers playing across town, I guess, in the CHL. Like, this also seems like a kind of a secret hockey town, Indianapolis.
Yeah, I'm going to have to contradict you and agree that, yeah, it's a secret hockey town. I mean, I know the teams didn't last so long. Like, the Racers were pretty quick in and out. The Checkers, despite all the success, they folded after 5 years. Yeah. But, you know, you go the Racers, the Checkers, the 90s, you had the Indianapolis Ice, were also a very good team. And then obviously today you still have the Indy Fuel there. So there's really a long hockey history there in Indianapolis.
Very cool.
And I need to point out that not only was this team good on the ice, but they also have, a hockey brain trust. because on that 81-82 team on defense, you have Darcy Regier and center Scott Housen.
Yeah.
So two guys who had, front office positions in the NHL.
That's right. Gerald Dudek, Greg Gilbert, Richard Brodeur, right? And they were all on those teams. So it's a lot. If you're a fan of the Islanders, again, like, it's funny too, because like, and Mike and I have talked about this, like, in, we want to try and spread Weird Islanders around to different eras. And, you know, we end up doing a lot of kind of more modern guys because that's who people remember. I try and go back to the 90s because that's sort of when I was growing up, my era. It is very difficult to pull Weird Islanders out of the early 80s because there just weren't that many guys that came in to play like one or two games and then disappeared. And if they did, nobody remembers them, you know, like, yeah. Again, Garth McGuigan is one example. It is kind of funny that there's not a whole lot of them. And I suspect most of the guys who would be those guys were playing for the Indianapolis Checkers at the time because they never got called up. But they did a good job down there. I mean, you win two championships in a row. That's pretty impressive. So after the 5 years in Indianapolis, the Islanders then moved their main affiliate to Massachusetts and a team called the Springfield Indians. Now, the Indians, prior to the Islanders, had a long, 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 long history, right? I mean, these guys go back decades before the Islanders took them over, right?
Yeah, this is an original member of the AHL, so you're talking 1936, wow. And really just a truly historic franchise that, I mean, we should be talking today in the same vein as, you know, the Hershey Bears and obviously, you know, original six teams as well, as just one of those that was around for forever, should have been around for forever. And I hope I don't get this completely wrong, but I know. So the Indians in 94 moved to Worcester, Massachusetts. Hopefully I pronounced Worcester right. And they became the Worcester Ice Cats. And Dan, do you want to guess which Islander owner owned the Ice Cats?
Worcester Ice Cats. I am good. Well, let's see. Since none of them had any money, I'm not going to assume that no matter who it was, it didn't end well. So I'm going to just go with the first guy, which is Roy Bo. Was it Roy Bo?
You're right. It's Roy Bo.
There you go.
I guess many years after he ran out of money with the Nets and the Islanders, he got back into it. And I don't want to blame him for moving the Indians. I don't know 100% sure if that was the story, but I know he was the Ice Cats owner. So they moved to Worcester and became that team, which a lot of people love, but I'm sure the people in Springfield may not be so happy with that one.
And Worcester would come all the way back, as we have seen now with the Railers currently. But yeah, so the Indians do go back a long, long ways. Like the Hershey Bears, you know, 99% of minor league teams disappear, but then you have a team like the Hershey Bears that just has been in operation since the turn of the century, basically, which is crazy. And if you ever get to go to Hershey Park, they have a whole museum with the Bears in it. And it's really fascinating. My wife and my daughter and I went when my daughter was little, and yeah, they didn't care about the hockey stuff, but I was just fascinated. I'm like, oh man. And then, and of course they, you know, they've been with the Caps for so long. I'm like, oh, it's Joey Juno. Oh, it's Peter Bondra. Who are you talking about? Why do you know all these Hershey Bears? Because they were all played for the Caps and they all drove me crazy playing for the Islanders. But the Indians were the Islanders team for a couple of years there. What's and their home arena was like really historic too, right? You were saying that the Coliseum, yeah, so, they played at?
Right. It's the Big E Coliseum in Springfield, which again has just been around for forever. Opened in 1926. So I guess currently known as, or maybe better known as, the Eastern States Coliseum, but yeah, that's, again, just up there, I guess, in historic Springfield, Massachusetts, with the Basketball Hall of Fame and all that.
There you go. That's pretty cool. And then some of the – so now they won Calder Cups in 1990 and 91. I think – was the 1990 team still an Islanders affiliate?
Yeah, I think that was the last year. Yeah, because you've got Tom Fitzgerald and Rob DiMaio.
Right. A couple. Randy Wood, Jeff Hackett. And then they became the Hartford Whalers affiliate. And the Whalers – may have been the most mid team ever in NHL history, but their minor league team was pretty good because they won a couple of championships. But who's this guy who in 88 had 116 points for the Islanders affiliate Springfield Indians?
Bruce Boudreau, believe it or not.
I can't.
Legendary NHL coach.
Yeah. I can't picture him as a player, let alone a player getting 116 points. Jeez, he was center. I thought he was a defenseman. But we will actually see Bruce Boudreau again later on in this, which might infuriate you, depending on how the Islanders are doing when you're listening to this. But we'll see. But yeah, 116 points for old Bruce that season. That's pretty wild. He had 42 goals, 74 assists. Damn, that's pretty good.
I have some sort of cognitive dissonance with all these general managers and front office guys, seeing them come up as players. I'm like, what? You played? No, you're the guy who's been in management for 30 years.
Right. It's just
strange.
Yeah. Like Darcy Regier, you know, I still think of him as the Sabres general manager, and he's got like the little glasses and like a bad tie, like a loud 90s tie on. And somehow this guy was a player for the Islanders for years in the minors. Like you can't really think about it, but it is pretty funny.
Right, and he was in charge of the Sabres forever.
Yes, yes, like, yeah.
When did you play? When did you have time to play? You were running the Sabres.
Exactly. I mean, Bruce Boudreau, we all know of as the lovable ice cream eating coach who, you know, was out there. But apparently he had a heck of a season in 1988, were the Springfield Indians. And again, much like Willie O'Ree, we talked about it. You know, these were like independent players, and you know, I guess they weren't Islanders property technically, and so they couldn't bring them up. But I think the 1988 Islanders probably would have liked to have given Bruce Boudreau a crack at playing, but it never happened, and that would have changed history. But we're going to skip a couple of teams here because they had a couple of sort of one-offs with in Peoria and back in Indianapolis with the Ice. And we're going to talk about another team that we've talked about here on Weird Islanders before, the Capital District Islanders. Now, if you're like me and you grew up, you know, in the 80s watching the team, this might be the first sort of minor league team you remember. They had another very colorful history. Again, the first season of Weird Islanders, I had a conversation with Bob Dittmeyer, who had covered them for the local paper. And this is where we start to see a man who would become a very, very important character in Islanders minor league history. And his name is Robert Butch Goring. And he was obviously a legendary Islanders player. They put him on waivers. He got picked up by the Bruins. He ended up coaching the Bruins for a while. Didn't go too well. But Butch really, I think, became more of a coach in the minors. And that started with Capital District, which, of course, played out of the Albany area and Troy in upstate New York. And they eventually became the Albany River Rats and are now the Charlotte Checkers. So believe it or not, the Capital District Islanders are still kicking around. But this is where Butch starts to make his first appearance. Talk about cognitive dissonance. Like, I know I've seen Butch coach, but like the thought of him sort of coaching in the minors in Troy, New York is kind of funny to me. What have you learned about the Capital District Islanders? Their logo has to be one of the least creative logos in the history of minor league sports. It's just Islanders logo with Capital District on top.
Yeah, unfortunately, in Fort Worth, they got pretty creative with it, mimicking the logo, but this one is a straight Islander logo. And I guess I don't know exactly why the decision was made to do this. I guess this was, you know, hey, we will have control of our prospects if we own the team and all that, which, you know, as we talked about in Indianapolis, there was quite a good crop of prospects, but by the time you get to 1990, it's much much different for the Islanders and their prospects. So, not quite the same star power. So, yeah, this team wasn't quite as good. I remember. I think I had like this was right when hockey cards were blowing up. So I have the old the set was called Classic, and they did a lot of minor league cards. So I had like I don't know if it was Danny Lorenz or who it was, but you know some Capital District Islander cards. And I didn't look at this beforehand, I wasn't gonna peg Butch as a coach here, because I remember him from some teams that we'll get to in a few minutes, but I didn't realize that this is where it started for him.
Yeah. Are you saying George Maniluk did not bring the star power to the Capital District Islanders that some other people had? If you want to hear a lot about the Capital District Islanders, you should check out the Islanders Award Winners episode I did on Mark Fitzpatrick and his ordeal to come back from his blood disease. He spent a lot of time playing for the Capital District Islanders. You know, this again, it's a who's who of sort of early 90s, late 80s Islanders. I'm looking at Travis Green, Alan Kerr, Dennis Vasky, Brad Lauer, Tom Fitzgerald, you mentioned before, Kevin Cheveldayoff. There you go. There's another front office guy who, believe it or not, was a player. Dave Chizowski is another one. Chris Pryor. Dean Chenalth, our old buddy. Oh, and this guy, Mark Bergevin. How about that? That's right. Mark Bergevin, the everybody's favorite general manager who is now an ex-general manager. At least he is as of this conversation. But, yeah, it's pretty wild. And, you know, if you go down and look, you'll be like, oh, I remember that guy. Because they all came up and played. For, you know, probably that 93 Islanders team was probably stacked with those guys. This is that era, though, of like teams starting to own their minor league teams, although with the Islanders, that would have to wait for another few years, because in the mid-90s, and these are the teams you're talking about, and I know these teams well as well, the Islanders then went, you know, they went from having their affiliate in Troy, New York, which is really not far from Long Island, back out to Denver, of all places, and the Denver Grizzlies. And this was, again, where Butch would coach. And this Denver team, which would then become the Utah Grizzlies a year later in 1995, they were damn good. And they, again, won back-to-back championships.
More debris on the ice being collected. Kansas City has Chirbaya, Krupa, Shalhoub, Kintain, Emmons, and Skremen up there. Their net is empty. Taylor will take the draw against Emmons in the ring to the right of Tommy Salo. 4-3 Denver leads at 9 seconds remaining. If they hold on, they are the Turner Cup champions. Taylor ties his man up, gets it to the corner. Rochford drives it hard around the wall. This will come out of the zone and go the length of the ice. No, it won't go the length of the ice. The horn will sound and it's all over. The expansion Denver Grizzlies have become the sixth team in IHL history to win a Turner Cup in their initial season. After winning the regular season championship, they follow it up with a cup.
A great season, not only for the club, but certainly for the city of Denver as well. They can be very proud of their hockey club that may be back next season or may not. It might be somewhere else. I talked to Butch Goring this morning and I asked him what this would mean to him, a championship. The guy has 4 Stanley Cup rings and he said, hey, a championship follows you wherever you go. You're always going to be a champion. He'll always be known as a Stanley Cup champion, and now he's always going to be known as a Turner Cup champion.
This was a team I remember very, very vividly. Great jerseys. They had Ziggy Palfy, who was a huge, you know, star for the Islanders later on. But also Tommy Salo, Mick Fakoda, Richard Park. And this was probably maybe Butch's finest moment as a coach, I would assume, if I ever get a chance to talk to him. It's probably these Grizzlies teams, right? I mean, they were really something special.
As the 1994-95 International Hockey League season came to a close, the Denver Grizzlies swept the Kansas City Blades in the 1995 Turner Cup Finals. It was a sweet victory for the Grizzlies as they became just the sixth team in the 50-year history of the IHL to be crowned champions in just their first season. This victory wrapped up a storybook season for the Grizzlies, one which saw this expansion team dominate the IHL with 57 wins and 120 points, the best first-year record in league history and the fifth best overall. And their success didn't stop on the ice. Over 500,000 fans passed through the turnstiles during the 1994-95 season, bringing professional hockey back to Denver in full force. After 8 professional hockey teams had come and gone in Denver, hockey fans finally had a winner. But the Grizzlies' success was their downfall. Backed by hockey's reincarnation in the Mile High City, the owners of the Denver Nuggets of the National Basketball Association purchased the National Hockey League's Quebec Nordiques with the intention of moving them to Denver. So, as the Denver Grizzlies celebrated their championship season, their one-year existence was coming to an end in Colorado. Following the Turner Cup celebration, the Grizzlies looked for a new home, not only for the 1995-96 season, but beyond. The top contender was Salt Lake City, whose 25-year-old Golden Eagles franchise had departed to become the Detroit Vipers the previous year. So just as they had brought hockey out of hibernation a year earlier in Denver, the Grizzlies would do the same for Utah.
The move to Utah went well because they're still out there today.
the Stars team. But they had a great logo, just an angry bear sitting on a hockey stick. It says Grizzlies on it. And how many teams have you ever seen this too in your research where like a team, especially in the minors, they will win a championship in one city and then end up moving to another and then winning again? Like how often does that happen? I can't, unless this was the first one, but I doubt it. There had to be a few more times like this.
Oh man. I mean, that's, you got me. That's gotta be, I mean, surely that's a first. You win a title in 2 different cities.
Right.
And then on top of that, they don't even change the name and the logo. A lot of times they'll move the city and they'll completely just scrap everything and, you know, and start fresh. But yeah, that's something else. And I know, a great piece of 90s merchandise. It's if you can get your hands on a Ziggy Palfy Grizzlies jersey,
that would be pretty dope.
Or you can get a blank Grizzlies one and get somebody to stitch numbers on it. I've seen it. There's a few people that have them, and every time I see that posted online, I'm like, that is it, man. That's the jersey.
That is pretty cool. That's definitely right up there. Or if you don't want to get Palfy, you get Tommy Salo. That's another good one too. We're going to talk about another sick jersey in a minute and another sick player as well before we get on there. But a couple more things about the Grizzlies. So Butch coached them for 4 seasons and then Bob Bourne took over and coached them for another 2, which is also pretty cool. In addition to the guys we mentioned before, we are recording this actually in the middle of January and the Islanders just finished playing the Winnipeg Jets. And Vladimir Nemetsnikov was in that game, and Butch mentioned in the game that he coached his dad in the IHL. This is in the International Hockey League. I should have mentioned that before. And yes, in fact, Evgeny Nemetsnikov was on these Grizzlies teams for Butch years ago. So that's pretty funny. I can imagine him going up to young Vladimir Nemetsnikov and being like, "Yeah, coach your dad." And Vlad being like, "Who the hell are you?" Also, if you look at this roster, you will see two names stick out that not for their Islanders connections, but for their Bruins connections. One is Andy Brickley, the color commentator, often sitting next beside Jack Edwards, everybody's favorite play-by-play man, with possibly the thickest Massachusetts accent I've ever heard. But I think Andy Brickley's pretty good. And then if you listen to Bruins radio, I don't assume a lot of people listening to this do, their color commentator is a guy named Bob Beers, who played for the Islanders time too and was also on these Grizzlies teams and is a guy I've wanted to get on this show for a while, and I have no idea how to contact him. So if you know any way for me to get in touch with Bob Beers, please reach out and let me know, because I love to talk to him about playing for the Islanders and playing on these minor league teams. But yeah, those Grizzlies teams, I would suspect that aside from the Bridgeport team, being the main group, if you're going to get an Islanders minor league jersey, I got to think that if you're, probably late 40s, I would think you might go Capital District. But if you're like early 40s, I think Denver/Utah Grizzlies is probably the way to go. And any one of these guys would be kind of a cool thing to see. I mean, and you said you've seen these jerseys out in the wild before?
Yeah, I don't know if they were just fan jerseys or actual gamers. But, you know, like I said, I know the Palfy jersey is out there and it's cool as heck. Yeah. I'm sure you can find it on Google and... Mm. And just looking through the roster, I've got this is just like a weird crossover of Islander eras. Yeah. So like you've got Mick Vokoda on here, played 162 games for the Utah Grizzlies. And I think of Mick Vokoda, I'm like, all right, you know, right. That's like early 90s. That's like that 93 playoff run. And then right next to him, I have it sorted by points, Richard Park. And I'm like, I thought Richard Park only existed from like 2005 to 2010. so they crossed paths on the 99-2000 Utah Grizzlies team. Hmm. Just very, very weird Islanders for you.
Yeah,
there.
Seriously. I mean, all of these teams are great, but yeah, that team for sure for weird Islanders is definitely awesome. But those are by far the most successful minor league affiliates the Islanders have had in my lifetime. You know, we're talking about Bridgeport in a minute and they only really had one good season, but I remember those Grizzlies teams winning championships and thinking, wow, that's got to be a great sign, right? Like, you know, that means those guys are going to come up and lead the Islanders to a Stanley Cup and playoff glory. Well, didn't really work out.
Oh, my gosh. And they won the title in 1996, which is peak, the opposite of peak.
Exactly.
The valley of Millbury would be the time period there.
Exactly. That's pretty funny. Well, hey, it worked for the Devils, I thought. You know, the Albany Devils won the Calder Cup. Big Devils won the Stanley Cup. I thought that's how it worked, yep. But apparently not.
Yeah.
After Utah/Denver, the Islanders, again, moved to another place that is close to your heart and a place, again, that you wouldn't think is a hockey hotbed, but has a long, long, long history in the sport. And this team has one of my favorite logos of all time. And I was so excited when you added this shirt. And I was one of the first people to be like, I need one of those shirts. And I have it and I love it. And I've worn it to work and had people be like, what is that? I got to tell them. It's a Kentucky Thoroughblade shirt, man. This was one of the great minor league teams of the 90s. The Islanders were an affiliate of theirs for a year. And they, again, had a bunch of famous players on it. Steve Webb, a guy named Evgeny Nabokov. And if you're wondering, wait a minute, he was an Islander before he was an Islander? No, this was a split affiliate with the San Jose Sharks. So there was a lot of Sharks in Kentucky, a lot of Islanders in Kentucky. And one guy in particular named Zdeno Chara. Spent a lot of time playing in Kentucky, and I can't imagine what a hockey fan in 1997 Kentucky must have thought seeing this enormous Slovakian man prowling the ice for the Kentucky Thoroughblades. But I mean, you you're in the area. Like, what's that like out there? The hockey scene, and like, do the Thoroughblades have like still a presence out there?
Yeah, this is my favorite era that we're getting into, you know, with the Grizzlies and the Thoroughblades. And some of the ones up next that I won't spoil. Just these absolutely insane logos, yeah. These team names that are, you know, the Thoroughblades, the same era as, you know, the Albany River Rats. Mm. Just these strange logos, strange colors, but just awesome. Mm. They were awesome at the time. They're awesome in retrospect. And yeah, so Zdeno Chara playing in Kentucky. You never thought that would be a thing, but the Thoroughblades, man, they're well remembered around here. Mm. They were an AHL team for about 5 years. And, you know, I moved to the area here. I'm in northern Kentucky, just south of Cincinnati, which, yes, the Cincinnati airport is in Kentucky. Nobody knows that. I learned that when I moved here. But yeah, it's this weird, there's this weird dividing line. So we're pretty close to Miami of Ohio and that university that has a hockey team. Mm. And then as you get down and you cross the river into Kentucky, you know, there's not as, you know, there's no D1 hockey. There's, at this point, there's actually no minor league hockey in Kentucky, which is pretty unfortunate. But it's still big here and people like it. And it's, you know, the Thoroughblades are extremely well remembered as, you know, that's where I went when I grew up and they had Nabokov and they had Chara and those names really meant something to people because these guys went on and were huge stars. Mm. And while we're talking about it and college hockey in Kentucky, which, you know, may never get on this podcast ever again, I got to shout out the University of Kentucky, hockey team, which it's a club sport, but they play at midnight on Friday nights. Whoa. And it is an institution down there. My wife, I'm not going to tell you when she went to college and she'll get upset about that. But the team has been playing at midnight for as long as she can remember, and they get a good following, and the kids come out and support them. Wow. So, you know, kudos to them on that.
How wiped must those players be playing at midnight though? I don't understand.
I have no idea. I am in my late 30s and I cannot get down there for a game as much as I want to. That is well past my bedtime at this point.
Right. That's pretty funny.
But, yeah, so it's this strange horse logo with horse, really probably on steroids, carrying a hockey stick. And they played at Rupp Arena, the famous home of the University of Kentucky basketball team. And, yeah. You know, unfortunately, things kind of didn't work out between them and the arena, which is why they were eventually sold and moved to Cleveland. But it's well remembered around here for sure.
That's really cool. The Thoroughblades also part of the 90s teal color scheme boom. That you'll remember that we can all absolutely thank the Charlotte Hornets for that. Once that happened, all of a sudden, oh my God, everybody's got teal now. And I can imagine the Miami Dolphins are like, dude, we were wearing teal 20 years ago. What are you guys all doing now? But yeah, no, it's a sick jersey. And again, just, it is a great era. Like just thinking about like, here you are, you know, the NHL was obviously much smaller back then. And it was, you know, kind of bigger cities, although places like Long Island and San Jose had them too. But like, you know, you're in Kentucky and all of a sudden you can go to a minor league game and like watch these guys and then all of a sudden see them on TV and see them playing big minutes for big teams. I can imagine somebody, you know, people in Kentucky became big hockey fans through that. And then it wasn't long before, you know, they're watching Zdeno Chara play for the Senators or Bruins and, you know, they're lifelong fans without ever having an NHL team there. But like they had NHL players come through there and it was pretty good. Not to mention Steve Webb and Evgeny Nabokov as well. I can imagine a lot of Thoroughblades fans probably became Sharks fans. But another team that I remember very well from this era that I think also may have had some Zdeno Chara time. I'm not even sure. I'll have to look it up. Was the Lowell Lock Monsters. Now, the Lowell Lock Monsters, again, are still around. They're actually the Utica Comets now after playing for a bunch. They became the Albany Devils, became the Binghamton Devils. Now they're the Utica Comets. And I remember when this team was founded. I remember when their logo was first released, and I can name a ton of players on this roster because I interviewed a bunch of them when I was an intern for the Islanders and wrote for their program because this was my job, was to talk to the guys, the prospects, you know, because it was like, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know what I was doing. So it was kind of a match made in heaven, and they were all very nice to me. And yeah, Zdeno Chara is here. Dmitry Nabokov, he's not Evgeny, he was Dmitry. He didn't hang around that long. Vladimir Orzog, Warren Looning, who I remember talking to, Ray Giroux, Ted Crowley, who came up and had a few games with the Islanders, Mark Lawrence, who had a real breakout season with the Islanders, signed a contract, never broke out ever again. Chara was there for a few games. Ray Schultz and then Marcel Cousineau was a goalie you may or may not remember. Oh, and look at this. Steve Valiquette also played for the Lowell Lock Monsters for a while. This now Lowell's in Massachusetts, for those who don't know. So, you know, now we're coming back east. And this logo is equally as insane. I mean, it looks like the 1998 Godzilla. It's like purple. I don't know what a Loch Monster is meant to be, I guess. Sort of like a Loch Ness Monster, but I don't know if there's like a history of sea creatures and sea monsters in Lowell, Massachusetts. It's weird, but I guess it's one of my favorite lines from my favorite movie, This is Spinal Tap. There's such a fine line between stupid and clever. So like the Thoroughblades jersey and logo I find awesome, but the Lowell Loch Monsters jersey I find kind of weird and strange. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, you can figure this out. Maybe is there a reason why one of these things is sort of like, oh shit, that's amazing. And the other was like, dude, what is that?
Yeah, this logo and jersey, you should Google the jersey, because there's, if you search for game used Lowell Loch Monster jerseys, the first result should be a Roberto Luongo jersey. So there's a number of Islander connections here. I saw Andrew Ladd on the roster. Wow. I saw Johnny Boychuk, obviously pre-Islanders. But this is like this jersey, they added every piece of flair they possibly could. It's like a Guy Fieri hockey jersey. Mm. It's like I think the colors are great. The logo is great. And then they designed, okay, so the design has, you know, like a dragon's kind of, I guess you would call it like scales or something on it. Okay, that's fine. Well, then they added these shoulder patches. It's like an L with, you know, dragon. I don't know if you call it wings or whatever. And then, but that they didn't stop there. They went to the numbers. So then they had their own custom number style.
Right, I remember that.
And then even the lettering. The lettering is the first and last letter of the name is, the font is bigger than all the letters in the middle. And the first and last letter has this little flare on it as like a dragon tail. And I'm just like, every piece, as a whole thing, you're looking at it, it's purple, it's red, it's black. You're just like, okay, this is cool. But as soon as you start looking into it,
right,
you're just like, what did you guys
way
do?
Way too much going on here. Man, I knew they had custom numbers, but I didn't know that about like the typeface. Oh my God, that's insane. Why?
Yeah, there's a lot happening there. But, you know, right. Zdeno Chara, Roberto Luongo, Boychuk, there's quite some names on this roster that came through there.
And it sounds like they probably spent more on the jerseys than they did on the roster. Gee whiz. Speaking of names, you know, the head coach of the Lowell Loch Monsters from 1999 to 2001, you guessed it, Bruce Boudreau. Once again, there he is. The Islanders, I suppose, could have given him a chance, but they didn't. And he coached for a couple of seasons in Lowell. And they went to the second round of the playoffs that first time in 99-2000. But that was about it. And then I guess after that, he was on to the Caps farm team. But Vladimir Orzok, like I said before, Mike Watt is another one. Oh, Peter Mika, who has come to alumni games. Yeah, this is a great group. Oh, Eric Brewer, another guy there. Dan Bylsma. Mm-hmm. How about that? He was a player, not a coach. Player, by the way, Dan Bylsma. I mean, this roster is just amazing. You could just go down. And there's Luongo. 26 games, 10 wins, 12 losses, 4 ties. 908 save percentage. Not bad. Steve Valiquette backed him up.
And it looks like Luongo wasn't even the starter. Nope. Somebody named Travis Scott started 46 games.
I was going to say, forget about Valiquette backing him up.
Roberto Luongo.
Yeah. So Valiquette was third, Luongo second, and yeah, Travis Scott. Shout out Travis Scott. Whoever you are, wherever you are, we remember you playing for the Lowell Loch Monsters. At least we do now. So there you go. Pretty impressive. And definitely Google Lowell Loch Monsters jerseys if you want to see something that you will definitely never, ever see again. Okay, so a couple more teams real quick before we get to Bridgeport. This is, again, where the Islanders started sharing their affiliates. 2000, 2001, Rick DiPietro was drafted, you'll remember, and he spent a lot of time with the Chicago Wolves organization, which is very much still around. Again, a very venerable old team. They are, I think, independent now, right? Which is where they're going. And then, but that was, you know, they had to send him someplace and they didn't have a minor league team. So Chicago it was. And then also that year, the Islanders went back to Springfield, this time with the Falcons. This Valiquette, Jason Krog, Trent Hunter, and somehow Danny Briere played 30 games for the Springfield Falcons, not Islanders property. We have no idea why he was there for 30 games, but that must have been pretty cool to kind of zip through Springfield there. Yeah, this was kind of a weird era that I guess the Islanders were put to bed soon enough. But yeah, I never understood this sort of split. Even then, I was like, wait, why don't we have an affiliate anymore? That's kind of weird. Although, again, they had done that with Kentucky, but I don't know. Do you know of a reason why they did this? I guess they just kind of lost their agreement with any particular team.
Yeah, I guess it was, you know, that year of just splitting teams in a lot of places, and that's kind of how we got to an AHL team for every NHL team at this point. And except for a shout out Chicago Wolves and Charlotte Checkers, I think those are the only two independent AHL teams left.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of why we got to where we are, because teams, you know, you're always splitting, right? The Thoroughblades was mostly Sharks, but you had some Islanders there, and you know, your guy doesn't get the playing time.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody gets upset and you know, it's that whole thing. You know, you just want to have the control. You want them to play your system. And
it also can't be lost that the Islanders at this time had no damn money. They had no ownership, really. I mean, this is the Spano, Gluckster, and Milstein era. And it wasn't until Charles Wong came around that they had money, and this would have been this era. And like you said, I think Charles was probably, you know, one of the things he was sold on was the idea that, you know, you had to have your own affiliate and, you know, a place to send your players to progress and be prospects. And that's where we get the Bridgeport Sound Tigers in 2001. We talk about these guys a lot. We don't need to kind of get too in depth. They are now the Bridgeport Islanders, obviously. The truth of the matter is with Bridgeport is that they only had really the one good season, I think, was their first season, 2001-2002, where they lost in the Calder Cup Finals. And they have not been anywhere even close to that level of success since. But I mean, this right here, if you're a fan of this show and you want to get some names and really kind of scratch the Weird Islanders itch, I think the 2001-2002 Bridgeport Sound Tigers are your guys. Head coach Steve Sterling, Michael Leboff favorite. Led in scoring by Trent Hunter, Jason Krog, Ray Giroux, Uri Kolnick. Who else is on here? Justin Mapletoft, Rafi Torres, Ray Schultz. Oh, Ken Sutton, the old Devil's farmhand, is there. Mezai, Branislav Mezai, Eric Goddard. Of course, DiPietro again. Dick Tarnstrom and Peter Mika again.
High slot of his own zone, Weaver. Far circle now to Nardella. He'll whistle one down the length of the ice. Getting there first is going to be Tapper, so DiPietro has to play it. Far side, it's fired by McKenzie. And taking it the other way is Armstrong. Over the line, right side now, Hunter. Far circle, Hunter. Took a chop right of the net. Shoots, he scores! What a beautiful goal by Trent Hunter. And Bridgeport has life, trailing 3-1 with 14:52 left.
That's a huge goal, and that's a great move by Trent Hunter. Just gives Bob Nardal the outside in. We saw Hunter do that last game and try to go high glove over Nerman, and Nerman made the save. This time he does the same move. Walks in, Nerman goes down. He puts a great shot right up in the top of the net. That's a big goal for Bridgeport. There's a lot of hockey left. Now they're down by two.
That's a big-time goal as well. You can tell why Hunter might be the one or two players, or the player from this Bridgeport team that could see regular time next year in the National Hockey League with the parent New York Islanders. He got that shot upstairs, and he was about 6 inches away from the crease. He's not even closer. Nerman, who hasn't been beaten high like that often, absolutely had the puck quickly go over his glove. What a big-time goal.
High slot, Giroux. Giroux, near side, Krog. Near circle, Krog. Shoots, he scores! Bridgeport down by one.
I'm just going to mention during that, but Bridgeport likes to force a lot of passes in their power play. They don't shoot the puck a lot. They try to make fancy plays. That time, Krog just finally took a pass. Didn't have a whole lot of options. Just said, you know what the heck, I'll fire at the net, see what happens. I don't know if Posse Nerman was late picking it up. It was right along the ice. It went right through his legs.
Puck drilled into the near circle and out of the near corner of the Wolves end. Nardella fires it around. And this one down the length of the ice. DiPietro snaps it with a stick. Good battle going on behind the play with Roach and Brown. Here's Podolin over the line, ice left. Shoots, he scores! I don't think Nerman saw it. We're tied at three.
Well, I'm not sure if Nerman didn't see it. Off the puck went off Bobby Nardella's stick. Podolin took a good long outlet pass from Schultz right up the middle. Skated in just over the line, just fired a shot. that just took off a rocket that went right over the shoulder of Posse Nerman. I don't know, maybe Billy could have seen it better, but hit Narza's stick, or if he just doesn't pick it up.
Tell you what, Bridgeport is feeling it. They were jumping up and down like they just won the Stanley Cup on the bench, let alone the Calder.
If you're an Islanders fan of, you know, 20 years, I mean, you could be 30 years old and still have never known a minor league team other than the Bridgeport team for the Islanders. It's pretty rare. I kind of remember when they first founded, their jerseys had like yellow in them. It was mostly blue. It was a little bit different. And then they became Islander style. And now they're just totally Islander style. It's gotta be funny for you too, like to see a modern minor league team as opposed to the sort of, you know, Wild West of the old days. It must be like night and day. Like, this is, you know, the stability of a team like Bridgeport versus a team like the Lowell Lock Monsters that's there one day and then gone the next. it's kind of funny, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, the Islanders have had this affiliate for 20 plus years, obviously stable because of NHL money and the big club. And I don't exactly know how the financials all work, but I'm sure it's something like that. as opposed to just, all right, like, I remember as a kid opening up the program and, you know, would say Indianapolis Checkers or whatever team it was. And I was just like, oh, okay. Mm. All right. I guess that's us then, whatever city that is with whatever team that is. Mm. But now there's the identity. I know people pop over on the ferry to go watch games, and, you know, I guess overall that's a good thing, right? You know, you got your own team and your own system, and, you know, people go over to Bridgeport and check it out. That's definitely a good thing. But it's, man, so the roster is a walk down memory lane for the last 20 years of Islanders and the coaches, and my goodness.
Yeah, that's too funny. Mike and I were asked on a recent mailbag episode over the Patreon if we'd ever been to a minor league game, and I think he said he had been to one Bridgeport game. I have not, unfortunately, but I would like to go. And you know, it's again, it's just like they have, it's funny to, like, I wish I had kind of paid more attention, because I would have liked to have seen the sort of culture grow up around you know, the Bridgeport team. And they've been playing at Webster Bank Arena for a while. I don't even know if it's called Webster Bank Arena anymore, but you know, they had some issues there. And for a while we thought maybe they were going to move to the island, maybe play out of the Coliseum, but that has not materialized and probably won't, especially if they turn it into a casino, which is the latest I heard, I guess. But it is kind of cool that they've been, you know, as cool as it is, I think, to go through the whole history, and we just spent time going through it. It is also cool to have the same one affiliate for 20 plus years. That's really good. And you see a lot of guys, obviously, guys like Brock Nelson, Adam Pellick, Ryan Pulock, like, they've all gone through the Sound Tigers system, and they're all here. And so that, it's nice to see them kind of grow up. But we're going to end the episode here with a little bit of Sound Tigers trivia. Now, we have the answers because we're staring right at them. So we'll ask you, the audience, who do you think is the all-time leading scorer in Bridgeport Sound Tigers history? Now, Kevin, before you looked at this, did you know the answer to this, or could you have guessed this player? Because I kind of had an idea, but seeing it laid out this way, I was not surprised, but I was like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Well, I would have probably guessed it, because I guess if you've been following the Sound Tigers at all for you know, the duration of their existence, you would know this is probably Mr. Sound Tiger. Mm. If they wanted to give out that name, it's Jeremy Colleton. Mm. Who had 77 goals, 203 points in 326 games.
Man, 326 games for the minor league affiliate for the New York Islanders. That's a lot. But believe it or not, that's not the most. And this is another guy who I would have thought he would have been the leading scorer. But we'll ask the audience again, who has the Sound Tigers record for most games played as a Sound Tiger? Another name that we heard a lot about, didn't see him really play for the Islanders at all. Again, this is another guy. I mean, if Jeremy Colleton is Mr. Sound Tiger, this guy is sort of like Mr. Sound Tiger Jr., I guess, right? He's been around a long time too.
I guess so. He was right in that same era as Colleton in the late 2000s, early 2010s. And I'm going to probably pronounce this wrong. It's Mark Wooten? Watton?
I've always said Watton.
Can you correct me?
We don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah,
that's pretty wild.
368 games, 110 points.
Yeah, 368 games. That is crazy. Last one. Believe it or not, neither of these guys is the leading goal scorer in Bridgeport Sound Tigers history. This is a guy, I don't think he ever got a shot with the Islanders. Oh no, I guess he did. 13 games. I guess we'll have to talk about him on some episode, but a lot of time with the Chicago Wolves. I don't know if I would have guessed this person doing this, but did you know who the leading goal scorer in Sound Tigers history was before we looked at this?
I know the name, but I don't, yeah. I don't know why, because he didn't play very long with the actual Islanders. Maybe there was a trade or something I missed, but it's Jeff Hamilton who scored 89 goals in 173 games between 2002 and 2006.
That's cool. Yeah. 89 games and a total of 89 penalty minutes.
Nice. Yeah.
But yeah.
And hey, I've got one for you just here on the back end.
Sure.
Just as I was looking through this. So we talked about Peter Mika earlier in the show. Yes. We know that he comes to the Alumni Nights. He did not play very many games for the Islanders. Mm. Did he play more games for the Islanders or more games for the Sound Tigers?
Oh, this feels like a trick question, because I know he played one game for the Islanders. And so
well, it is more than one.
Okay.
It was three for the Islanders.
Oh, he played three for the Islanders. Oh, okay. Oh, I thought he played one. Okay. So did he play more for the Islanders or for the Sound Tigers? I feel like this is a trick question, although I might be overthinking this. So I'm going to say he played more games for the Islanders than the Sound Tigers.
You're right. It's a trick question. He played one game for the Sound Tigers.
Wow. So he mainly played then for like Lowell and Springfield and Chicago, right? Or I would think.
Yep, yeah. You got it. Wow. Yep, you got the era just right. He played 63 games in Lowell, 27 in Springfield. Mm. One in Bridgeport, maybe it was a tryout or something, and then he was off to the Czech Republic for the rest of his career.
What a career! Love to talk to him. I mean, this guy comes over here and spends most of his time playing in Lowell and all these other weird places. One game in Bridge, I'm sure his one game in Bridgeport is very memorable, but that's pretty wild. This has been a lot of fun, Kevin. I hope you've had a great time. This has been a great tour. And if you want to read more about these teams, again, vintageicehockey.com isn't just a place where you can buy cool stuff. It's where you can read about the histories of these teams. And that's what makes it so great. It's like you can just look up a team and then get a whole little short history lesson about them. And it makes it kind of significant. Like, I mean, that kind of research probably takes a while, but I'm assuming it's still fun for you, right? Like after all this time, I mean, we just spent an hour talking about these whole teams. It's got to be cool for you to still do that, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and you know, less fun now because of all these, you know, stable AHL teams that don't move around all the time. Mm. You know, so the whole era of, you know, strange names, strange jerseys, you know, the teams are here and gone after a couple of years is. Right. I say era, but it's really everything about minor league hockey, like pre 2000.
I know you don't want to give it away, but is there anything you can kind of a bit of a tip on that we might be seeing shortly, whether it's a t-shirt, jersey, hat, something like that, whatever might be coming there. Now we don't know when this is going to air. So it could be a while from now, but are you working on anything special right now?
Well, always I got to shout out the Thoroughblades. It's an awesome logo. We've got t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and yes, teal jerseys. Mm. So the tip I'll give you is we talked about the insane Lowell Lock Monster jerseys. I knew that in such detail because that's what I've been researching this week, and that will hopefully be coming within the next couple months.
With the crazy numbers and all that stuff?
We might stop at the we'll do the numbers. We might not do the lettering on the nameplate because it's just too insane. But you can get yourself Mika on the back of a Lock Monsters jersey if you want.
Even just a plain low Lock Monsters jersey would be sick. And if I see anybody walking around UBS Arena with a low Lock Monsters jersey, you're going to have to take a picture with me because that's pretty crazy. But I look forward to it. I hope we can see it soon. That'll be really, really neat. And trust me, if when you put that out there, I'm going to be the first guy to retweet that and see how many more we sell because that is truly awesome. But check out vintageicehockey.com, obviously, all the time. Follow them on all your social medias, on Instagram and on Twitter, because, you know, stuff pops up all the time. It's just great. And again, seeing the growth of the site has been really, really cool. I mean, we've been a sponsor or I don't know, whatever you want to call this relationship. we're friends. We've been doing this, but I mean, again, all our, the money that we've made for the shirts goes right to the Center for Dementia Research. So it's not like that, but just seeing it grow and seeing all this stuff get added and seeing the history and the detail gone into it is really, really impressive. And I don't know how many people get to tell you that all the time, but it is really, really cool. And I'm very proud of you that you're able to put this together. It's really been neat to see it grow from the ground up.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. It's been a lot of work. Yeah. And I didn't really think it would become what it is today. And, if anybody out there has stories of strange teams that you saw or that your grandfather played for, if you've got a weird Indianapolis Checkers program sitting around, just reach out. Yeah. It's kevin@vintageicehockey.com. If you have suggestions for the site or you want to share your weird programs and other things you have, and I just love seeing that stuff regardless of, the business aspect.
Yeah. If you do that, reach out to Kevin and let him know. I mean, any and all information he can get on this stuff is going to go right into the shirts and the product, and it's just going to make it that much better. So please do that. We are going to leave you with a couple of other teams I had on my list here that I completely forgot about. We didn't get to talk about them, but that's okay. The Islanders had a bunch of ECHL affiliates, and one of them was the Trenton Titans, which played here in New Jersey. And I kind of still wish they were around, although Trenton is not close to where I live, but they were around for a while. The head coaches of the Trenton Titans, while the Islanders were, their affiliate for a while, included guys like Bruce Cassidy and Rick Kowalski, who's currently the coach of the Bridgeport Islanders. See, there I go again, calling them Sound Tigers. But Titans were around from 99 to 03, then from 05 to 06. In between, they were the Atlantic City Boardwalk Bullies, which I remember also from that era. And then I remember this team I never heard of, and I think it's one of the funniest things I've ever heard for a minor league team. International Hockey League, 1981 to 1984, Islanders affiliate, the Toledo Gold Diggers. Gold Diggers. That's an amazing team name. The likes of which we definitely will never see ever again. Probably for the best.
Yeah, that's an amazing one. Classic. Toledo's a huge hockey town. And that was a big IHL team back in the day that won some championships. And that's pretty cool. Just going down that list of secondary teams, I need to shout out some more crazy 90s teams. You have the Tallahassee Tiger Sharks from Tallahassee, Florida. Literal, shark stripes on the jersey. And another one that is an absolute fever dream is the Louisville River Frogs.
I've seen that one. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And I would encourage folks to go on our site for the Louisville River Frogs, only because at the bottom of the page, we have there's a newsreel from YouTube on there. And it kind of gives you a look at, the team from back in the day. And it just shows the insane looking mascot, the insane jerseys. And I read somewhere, apparently they had a hot tub in the arena that you could rent. I don't even know. It's just, yeah, I don't know. Whoever came up with that, they were really going for it. And I love it.
Amazing. I've seen that frog. It is a fever dream. He looks like he's on something. And I definitely recommend you check it out on vintageicehockey.com, or at least just Google it, because it's pretty wild. So yeah, that's great. And I'm glad we got those in. Sign up at patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety for ad-free episodes and bonus content. Of course, follow us on Twitter at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Our theme song is Knuckles by Bjorn Falk. Listen to more of Bjorn's music at Bandcamp and at Spotify. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Islanders Anxiety Podcasts are part of the Fans First Sports Network. Learn more at fansfirstsports.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. And obviously, shop vintageicehockey.com for all of the coolest hockey stuff you can possibly find. You won't get this stuff anywhere else. And so check it out. And thanks, Kevin, for coming on. This has been great.
Thanks, Dan. This was great. I had a lot of fun just recounting all these teams. And we have to mention the discount code anxiety20. You get 20% off your entire order when you order at least two items. That can be two of anything. So it's anxiety20 at VintageIceHockey.com.
Yep. Use it, buy stuff, support Kevin's site. It's fantastic. And we'll be back in a couple more weeks with another Weird Islander. Thanks for listening. And until then, keep the Islanders weird. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.